At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're back for part two of our discussion about the Ravens defense and that big win over the Texans on Christmas Day. If you missed part one and you're interested in a lot of dry wit in a big name from Houston radio and a friend of mine from my college days, Charlie Polillo, joined for the first half. A lot of very disparaging things to say about his Texans, who he's been a adopted fan of for many years. And unfortunately, a tough day for them. So he made us feel bad for feeling good about that Ravens win. On the other hand, I don't know how bad you'll feel for him. So give it a good listen. It's a good program. He's a very thoughtful host of radio down there who's done very well over the years in broadcasting. But we'll continue on with our discussion of the Ravens in this one. We're going to start with the pass rush. And the Ravens have, as of this exact moment, and I record this at 11:09 p.m. on 12/26. I have not seen the results of tonight's game, but it did not involve Denver, so I don't think it's likely to have changed. The Ravens lead the National Football League in sacks right now with 52. And they're in sole possession. Denver is one behind them at 51. And they may well catch them, obviously, but they have a game in hand and may be able to do this. But the Ravens pass rush, for all of the issues that people seem to have with it, has been relatively efficient over the season. And even with the down moments it's had with the absence of Travis Jones really hurting the pass rush in a significant way, the Ravens have still piled up at least two sacks in every one of their games, 16 in a row this year, three more extending into last year. So that's 19 straight. And the all-time record, I believe, is only 23. So the Ravens are up there with the longest stretches of all time. And I think it's probably ready to, it's time to give some love to this Ravens pass rush. We're going to talk a little bit about what happened in this game. The Ravens allowed 13 ample time and space opportunities, which is still too many. And they had 14 pressures. Now, you know, I've softened a little bit from wanting 1.5 pressures per ATS to have a good game for your pass rush. I'll take 1.3. But 14 to 13 is 1.07 or 1.08, and that's not enough. Virtually an identical game to the Steelers, where I think they were 13 and 12, 13 pressures and 12 ATS, and very similar to their overall season rate, which is 226 pressures and 212 ample time and space opportunities. So that ratio is important because the expectation in yards for those two things is very different. It's about 5 yards per play different for any ample time and space opportunity that you can change into a pressure, if you want to look at it that way. So anyway, this time, 13 ample time and space opportunities, 35% of the total, 101 yards, 7.8 yards per play, about 10 yards short of the standard for Stroud in that respect. Not bad. 7.8 yards per play is 8.5 is the expectation for those plays. So he came up about 10 yards short in that. With ball out quick, 10 plays, 38 yards. Now that's pretty bad. 3.8 yards per play. You should get about 6. So he's 22 yards below standard there. And with pressure, 14 plays, that's 38% of the time, 14 net yards. That's right, 14 plays, 14 net yards, 1.0 yards per play, 35 yards below expectation. So in total, Stroud was under expectation in each of the three pressure categories, did have some very bad misses in this game, a lot of very bad incomplete passes, and was 67 net yards below his expectation, 153 actual net, less 220 expected net yards. So that's a very bad result. Most of that would be applicable to the secondary because you're trying to measure what the pass rush is doing with how much pressure it is. Of course, it's very hard to totally break all the bonds, as I say, between pass rush and coverage, much in the same way you can't break the bonds between pitching and defense. But this is one of these cases where you do the best you can, and this is a start in that direction. I think this is the sixth consecutive game where the secondary has outperformed expectation. During those six games, the Ravens have had a opposing passer rating allowed of 76.3. And let me see, 76.3 or 75.3? Let me get that right. 76.3. And 4.4 yards per play allowed over that period. So that's a hell of a run here, folks. That is one hell of a defensive run. We talked about this in the first episode. Don't think this Ravens defense is getting near the love for what they are right now. This is one of the NFL's top defenses entering the playoffs. That six-game run done against five playoff teams, you could probably hear the air quotes directly over the microphone here, even though we're not a video pod. But they did face the Steelers twice. They did face the Texans. They did face the Chargers. And they did face the Eagles, who are one of the truly best teams in the NFL. But but not one of the best quarterbacked teams in the NFL. And they ended up with, you know, 4.4 yards per play allowed. That's a fine run, no matter how you want to call it. And I think, you know, this is a case where we got to look at what happened and say, let's reevaluate what was done here to fix this thing. All right. Because I think it probably was John Harbaugh's decision to bring in Dean Pease. I do not believe that Zach Orr, as a first-year coordinator, said, I want to bring in Dean Pease to help me coach this defense or to help me look over my shoulder and do quality control. I think that was a suggestion which came from elsewhere in the organization. My guess is it's a Harbaugh suggestion, but I don't know it for a fact. But it just would make sense. It would be anyone doing otherwise coming to the table with that. It would have been an outside the silo suggestion, or it would have been a bottom up suggestion. Bottom up is possible. It could have been someone else from a different position group saying, hey, maybe we get Dean in here. He's 75. He's sitting at home. I'm sure he'd love to help. But I think it was probably John Harbaugh personally who said, hey, we could do this. This would make sense. Nobody's toes are getting stepped on. Zach can still feel confident about his future, and he absolutely can right now. And they brought him in. So that was the first step they did. They tried different things schematically to try and make it work. They went to a dime defense and to fix their horrific problems with coverage from the weak side linebacker position. From both linebackers were having difficulty getting picked on. With your Mike, you generally tolerate it because he's your signal caller, in this case with Roquan, and he provides you other value. He can rush the passer. He can do a lot of other things. But you can't have good quarterbacks just picking on your weak side linebacker as your biggest coverage weakness. So they said, okay, we're going to play dime. And they put Hamilton in that dime spot in a very traditional dime role, that three safety look. The problem was that the remaining safeties on the back end were still sucking so badly in terms of being in the wrong place, not following their assignments, maybe not knowing where they were supposed to be, or maybe not buying into the situation, but they weren't staying where they needed to be. And because of that, you know, Eddie Jackson cost the Ravens a ball game in Cleveland. And Marcus Williams, probably you can make the case that he might have cost them in the Oakland game. Las Vegas game. I'm always like a city behind in terms of where people are moving. But anyway, those are possibilities. By the way, if you hear breaks in this podcast, I just got to blow my nose here for a second. I've got COVID and we're trying to work through it here. Really appreciated having Charlie come on as a last minute guest for the show for the first half. But this is going to cause some breaks in the second one. So if you're one of the listeners who listens at 1.5, that only took two-thirds as long, if I understand the math correctly. All right. So let's talk a little bit about what else happened in this game. Orr used just seven rushes of seven plus. 19% for the game. They weren't particularly successful on those. They gave up 6.7 yards per play when they did blitz with in terms of the traditional thought, which is five plus. But you know, the pass rush by numbers was really most effective when they used four. So their four-man pass rush, they had 30 of those for 106 total yards, 3.5 yards per play, five sacks, and one turnover. I'd say that's pretty darn successful. I'm new here, but that's what I think. In terms of deceptive elements, they used them fairly extensively. Off-ball blitzes, they used nine. That included two doubles, so it was seven total plays with nine spread across them. 0.24 off-ball blitzes per play. They're getting good. I've mentioned this before of disguising their blitzes. They don't give it away when the slot corner or an inside linebacker is coming until after the snap. Sometimes a quarterback will try and get that out of the defense with a pre-snap read. The Ravens have been pretty good about hiding that these last few weeks. They only got 18 net yards on those seven plays, 2.6 yards per play. With one interception on those. These 12 stunts, by the way, I was listening to Charlie's podcast. I didn't ask him about this on the show, but Charlie's podcast really seemed to think the stunts were what was beating the Texans, and I don't think that was the case. But good guy. They used two doubles in among 12 stunts, 7.2 yards per play and one sack. The big notable play was there was a sack on a beautiful stunt by Van Noy through the, I believe, right A-gap. Looping around Travis Jones in a outstanding S-11 quickness. I think it was Travis Jones. Might have been Matt Abike actually on that in that three gap there, in the three tech I should say there. Anyway, three simulated pressures, 3.0 yards per play, one interception. Didn't really choose to do that much with Stroud or with their offensive line. Their offensive line has some continuity issues. They've had a lot of injuries on that line. To listen to Houston sports talk people talk, this Texans team is dunner than fried chicken in terms of being ready to go to the playoffs and try and win a game. Last year they did win a game. They got a home game, but Charlie is very direct and honest about, you know, playing in a crap division, getting a championship banner that doesn't mean a whole lot, and they're going to get to go to the playoffs. And you know, this is a really big down year for Stroud in particular, but it is what it is. And the Texans, obviously had it wrapped up pretty early in terms of the division. I think they had it won maybe 3 weeks ago, might have been two, but they look good doing it. And they beat Buffalo. That's their signature win of the year earlier. I think in week five that occurred, but they just haven't been the same team for most of the second half here. So a team that I don't think a lot of people would give a particularly good chance to win a playoff game. And I think they'd be probably no better than a scratch against Pittsburgh, a pick'em favorite, if they get the Steelers at home, which I think is the most likely potential outcome. The Steelers not playing good football right now, as we know. Owe led the team in with contributions to four pressure events. He had a sack minus 13, a quarterback hit, a pressure, another half pressure. Matt Abike had three, that nice sack minus four, a quarterback hit, another late quarterback hit. That doesn't count as a pressure technically, but since he knocks the quarterback on the ground, I recorded in these numbers, but the late quarterback hit means he didn't happen within 3 seconds. And then there were four other guys, Van Noy, Smith, Jones, and Harrison, who each had two pressure events. So, good game of spreading the wealth. Nine different guys generated a pressure. They've had more. They had as many as 13 in a game. They emptied the bench in this game, but by the time they emptied the bench, some interesting things were happening. First of all, D'Amico Ryans proved he's an adult, and with the game lost, played to end the game as quickly as possible. So the Texans had the football with 2 minutes to go. Normally, that's a time where if the Ravens had the football, they'd kneel it three times, the game would be over. Well, the Texans ran it three times, effectively kneeling out the game in the same amount of total plays with, you know, run M3, run M0, run L1 to get the game over with. So that worked out. D'Amico Ryans put himself in the same category with McDermott from earlier in the year and with Mike Tomlin in terms of games the Ravens had one-sided leads in. You can't really evaluate Harbaugh on that same level because Harbaugh hasn't – the Ravens haven't lost a game by multiple scores in, what, 3 years? And with Jackson, a quarterback anyway, since I think that the 40 cover zero looks at Miami in 2021 was the last time they lost such a game by more than one score. So with Jackson in at quarterback. So they haven't really been tested in that way. But the guy who didn't pass the test there was Todd Bowles, who got his top wide receiver injured while trying to come back and win the game. There's some other teams that tried to come back in the game, and the Ravens made it look like it was possible. So you want to look at that Dallas game? That's one to look at in terms of the Tampa Bay game, I guess, also fits into it in a little way, is that it got a little too uncomfortable in that sense. But in truth, Tomlin had already given the game away by not going for it on 4th and 12, down two scores from midfield. So from that perspective, I think the Steelers already kind of had given up the game a little earlier, and Tampa Bay was late to do it and paid the price, which was really unfortunate for Chris Godwin and for Tampa Bay in general. All right, let's talk about some individual player discussions because some things went well here. I think there were some players we ought to talk about a little bit. Adafe Owe came back and had a very good game as a pass rusher. And some things were really nice about it. That some of it worked well with Adafe's style. And some of it is just, it's nice to see Adafe being a good containment player. But we'll talk about this. So he had a sack in the game where there was a weird fake handoff where Stroud, facing forward, did not let on that he still had the football in any way by moving with the football. He's still holding it in front where any defensive player could have seen it. I was fooled by that non-motion, and actually my eyes followed the jet motion to the right side. And I think that's what the play design was really trying to do, by the way. But the Ravens pass rush and primarily Adafe Owe, not fooled on the play, contained Stroud very, very clearly from the front side. And it may have been a designed run to that side. That may have been what he's expecting to do, or it may have been some sort of a quicker outlet pass. But Stroud then ran backwards a little bit, could not escape Owe, and was taken down for a big S-minus 13, I think, on that play. So good play by Owe there. In general, he had some other pressures in the game, as I mentioned. He had led the team with a quarterback hit and another pressure and a half. So very good. One of his other half pressures led to another sack. I think that was Matabike's sack minus four that led to. So nice game for Adafe Owe. And frankly, we needed to see more pressures out of Adafe Owe. And, you know, you just can never make anyone happy, can we, as Ravens fans? We want to see Adafe convert and have a bunch of sacks, but we also want to see a high base of pressures. You know, want to see a normalized pyramid of pressures where he gets his number of pressures makes sense with the number of sacks he had. And he's done a bit good, you know, better job of picking up some sacks this year. He's certainly part of the Ravens' 52 sack NFL leading total, but his pressure rate has dropped off from quite good to not quite good this year, which is unfortunate. I don't have that right in front of me. I should have looked it up and put it on my outline here before I went to start recording this. But it's something we needed to see from Adafe Owe. It was a higher pressure rate this year. They have not used him in run situations. It surprises me also how unoften he plays this day, particularly after last year where he played just an exorbitant number of snaps. But Adafe Owe, let's just check this out. In this ball game, played only, let's see, 28 snaps that were non-penalty snaps. He might have played one or two more if you include the penalties. He was in for 4 of the 5 sacks. The Texans only gained 4.0 yards per play when he was in there. But he had 4 pressures in 15 pass sacks, so pass snaps. And I don't know even how many of those he might have been a pass rusher, but it wasn't all 15 times, I don't think. Excuse me. So Dafi Elway, good comeback game. Good to see him playing well on that line. We talked a little bit about Michael Pierce in the first show. 2.2 yards per play when he was in there. 17 plays, 37 yards. He certainly played very well. Only 1.7 yards per pass play. He's just had a terrific comeback so far. He looks like his legs are fine right now, is what I'll say. His gut does not look right. He looks like he put on, well, he looks like basically, if you think of the movie Total Recall, this is what Michael Pierce looks to me like right now. Like somebody's going to pull up his jersey on a play and Quato is going to jump out and tell him to start the reactor and save Mars, because he's gained a Quato in his belly. In terms of what's going on. So if you're looking for a nickname for Michael Pierce and you happen to know him personally, calling him Quato or talking to his, calling his belly Quato, that could be a thing. Anyway, playing great football and we're happy about that. Justin Matabike got after it pretty effectively in this game. Again, he's playing a lot better now that he always has one of the big men next to him. They went almost exclusively with the Matabike-Jones pairing, which means that Matabike's snaps are almost capped at what Jones's snaps were. And they didn't play a whole lot of snaps total on defense, only 54 real plays. And Jones and Matabike each played right around 30 snaps, 29 for Jones, 31 for Matabike. And they only had four plays, 3-1, where there was a difference between the two of them. So they're almost always on the field together. And for obvious reasons, that's really worked out for the Ravens. A great stunt tandem. And they operate extremely well together, given you want to find Matabike a one-on-one matchup. And they did some interesting things in this game, getting guys on the edge that were interior defensive linemen. And you think, oh, it's obvious they're going to stunt now. Well, one time they did that, and they didn't stunt at all. They just dropped two guys from the middle and blitzed two from further outside. So you don't always know with this Ravens pass rush. And that's, I think, a real credit to Orr, that even when he's rushing four, he can find a creative way to do it. And they did have a couple of times they did that. Haven't made real extensive use of trickery during this run. Actually, fairly limited use of trickery. The exception being that game against the Giants when they really pulled out a lot of the tools in the box because they're facing two significantly below the line quarterbacks in DeVito and Boyle, who really didn't meet a lot of standards. So they thought, well, let's try out some of the playbook here. And I thought they did a good job with that. Excuse me for a moment. All right. So we talked a little bit about Owe. We talked a little bit about Matabike. Travis Jones continues to be just the man. I thought his quarterback hit, they had one of the really hard quarterback hits you'll see. We saw something in the post-game interview from D'Amico Ryans that I thought really was making a point. And I think that there must have been something said by C.J. Stroud on the bench or to Ryans about what was going on with the pass rush and them not coming through. Because D'Amico said in his press conference, CJ just needs to keep playing. As in, CJ's got a job to do, and he's not doing that well at it. So he's got to not worry about these other guys who are not doing their job. And I presume he's talking about the offensive line. That's the way that came across to me. But it's out there. It's plastered all over YouTube as D'Amico Ryan's post-game interview. So it's out there. Interpret it how you will. And I think you'll find it's largely true how I'm coloring it here. Kyle Van Noy, another big game. Seems to be a big play every game. Last week against the Steelers, enormous collection of high-value plays, including recovering the Josh Wilson fumble, which was no easy It was a big hustle play, a real good play to fall on that football, one of the really big plays of the game. So anyway, he's done week after week, some positive.
At Ritual, we know what goes into the holiday season. The potluck planning, the gift giving, the spreadsheets. So this new year, take a moment for yourself with science-backed support that puts you first. So whether you're focusing on supporting foundational health with a clean vegan multivitamin or supporting your gut health with Symbiotic Plus, do it with 30% off your first month at ritual.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Things. The 11 and a half sacks are complete aberration. He needs another half a sack, by the way, to get to another bonus level. And he's already hit on a bunch of bonus levels nobody ever thought he'd get to. By the way, that is one of the very unfortunate things about the Ravens this year is Brian McFarland had some excellent information on him. They've already given away some very significant amount of NLTBE bonuses that'll come out of the 25 cap. It might be $8 to $10 million already at this point. So Ronnie Stanley being a big part of that in terms of, I think, what was a playing time incentive for him. So obviously the fact that Ronnie's been healthy all year has been a big factor in the Ravens' success. So it's not unreasonable that he would earn that money. Of course, it's just his cap dollars, obviously, for 25 that are going to be lost because of that. Somehow I don't feel as bad about losing those cap dollars as I feel this year about losing Odell Beckham cap dollars. Anyway, it is what it is. So we'll move on from that. Roquan Smith, I thought, had a good game. Again, pursuing around the field, doing some things well. Still a stabilizing force whenever he's on the field. You can't minimize that in terms of what he's done. Didn't have a missed tackle in this game. Had four stops, which is nice. He's having a good year in stops to missed tackles. Let me give you the total on that right now. But his stops to missed tackles for the year, 51-10. And that is an astounding figure, folks. 5.1-1. There were only maybe two draftable linebackers who were in that range this spring. It's extremely rare that any NFL player is in that good a position. And Roquan actually had three missed tackles against Pittsburgh the previous week. So he was looking, he'd be in an even better position had that not, you know, 2 weeks ago, he's in an even better position with 46-7. So it was over 6-1. I having a great year. I say all of the fears that Roquan had dropped a lot in terms of what he was providing. He's not quite the player he was in 2023 this year. And I think some of it has to do with some very poor safety play behind him. And there's probably some other reasons too. Might be carrying more weight has hurt him. It does look like he's carrying around a lot more weight, but he's been healthy and he's played very well in terms of the strikeout to walk ratio for inside linebacker stops to missed tackles. So those things are good. And he's been a reasonably good coverage player, I think, this year when you look at it overall. I mean, inside linebackers don't tend to be great as a whole, but he's held opponents to no TDs, which is something, and a 94.4 passer rating against. So could it be better? Sure. Do you expect it to be better out of your Mike linebacker? I think the answer is probably no, and the Ravens are very fortunate to have Roquan. There will be questions asked, I think, for the rest of his career here, whether or not spending as much as they did on inside linebacker was a good move. But if you were to have three more years like he's just had here, or even at the average of the last 2 years, I'd be very happy with the arrangement. I think it's more likely than not that his next season will be between 23 and 24 than that it'll be at the 24 level, for example. So I look forward to it. And of course, that assumes he stays healthy, and that obviously is a big assumption that goes with that. So inside linebacker, some things went on this game with Malik Harrison and Board splitting time again. Harrison didn't play too much outside linebacker. He went in for last six plays of the game, the last drive, to play outside linebacker just to give some other guys a rest. Played a lot of inside linebacker earlier. He did miss a couple of tackles, which isn't ideal. And obviously, it's one of the big things an inside linebacker you don't want to do. I should look him up, too, and see what his missed tackle to stop ratio is like for the year, because I don't imagine it's nearly as good as Roquan's, but I will do it here. And so that's going to be some apples and oranges, because we're comparing a guy who plays some outside linebacker. Yeah, but he's got 19 stops and 12 missed tackles. So you can tell that's not good. So that's, you know, 1.58 to 1 instead of the 5.1 to 1 you get from Roquan. Tackling has been a big problem for Malik, and I think they're going to have to figure out after 9 missed tackles in the last 5 games, they're going to need to figure out whether they're going to continue with Malik Harrison, an inside linebacker. I still think he'll be a guy they want to have at outside linebacker at that Sam spot on early downs. But I'm not convinced he's the right guy to have in there down after down at inside linebacker. They may not have another choice. If Roquan were ever to miss a game, you know, they certainly would need a player like Harrison to fill in, who's a, you know, much larger player than you would typically have at the position, but you definitely want a thumper at that Mike spot. But I'm not convinced it's the Harrison and inside linebacker thing has worked out tremendously well. Chris Board, big game for him with a sack. Did some other good things as well. What was there else to like about a Chris Board's game? He didn't miss a tackle. I don't think he had a tackle other than his sack. So solid game there. Obviously, a lot of what the Texans did was not running the football in this game. They only ran the ball, I think, 12 times the entire game. So, that's not much. So I could be wrong. They might have run it a few more times, because most of the players I have here, I know how to do this. They wouldn't have played the final series. So if I take like a Roquan and somebody who was only in there for the final 6 players, like a Bo Braid, there were 5. So it looks like they ran the ball 16 times maybe in the game. So that's still not much. That's not enough to have a lot of missed tackle risk or a lot of tackle opportunity. But in either case, not a lot from Chris Board in terms of events other than that sack. And that was a nice blitz off the left side to get home. Let's see. We can talk about one of the players we want to talk about here. Well, let's talk about the play of Nate Wiggins. So really was concerned on, I guess, what was the second half opening kickoff, the one that was returned by Pierce, who has been relegated from being their top running back at one point to now with Joe Mixon returning kicks. But anyway, he ran right over Wiggins on that play, and Wiggins looked down and twitching in a way that did not look good at all. Looked like it, you know, concussion was a possibility, a dislocation of some sort in the shoulder might have been a possibility, but they got him off the field and they got him back in the game a little bit later. It's great to see Nate Wiggins back. Tough kid, really trying hard to tackle. Obviously, it's not ideal to have Nate Wiggins playing special teams. You know, if you're starting left corner, and that's what he is right now, he really shouldn't be. You'd prefer if he were not on special teams. And, you know, they lost Marlon Humphrey last year on a field goal block attempt. But you want to talk about your low percentage opportunities. That's a tough place to lose a potential Pro Bowl or all pro player. And you need to take more care. That said, I'm always encouraging the Ravens to reduce the number of special teams only players they have. And, you know, I'm sure that the response that I get if I ask this to the Ravens would be, well, we've only got 48 guys on game day. One of those are third quarterback. 8 of them are offensive linemen. How do you expect me to put together a special teams unit if it's not going to be taken from these other players, you know? And it's a legitimate question. So they have to find out. Have to find a certain number of players to play, and I'm sure that can be difficult. Ardarius Washington, another fantastic game. Great to see him flying around the field. Both safeties, a big play in this game, and maybe more, but certainly at least one big one. Ardarius Washington knocking Mixon out at the 1 yard line to end one drive. Then he got absolutely mauled by Zach Orr after the play. Great to see that's a defensive coordinator who is a player's coach right there. Very relatable. Hopping all over his guy after a big play. You couldn't even tell him. He's a blur of color rushing through the screen as it happened. And then I saw a video from it after the fact, and it's, you know, Zach Orr recovering from jumping on Washington there. But it's very nice to see a relatable coach like that. You know, the players have to love him. The disconnect I have with this is, why was it so difficult for veterans like Eddie Jackson and Marcus Williams to buy into the system that Orr is selling them? So you got a guy who's obviously, it's not a problem for Washington and Hamilton. They're playing great back there right now. And maybe there have been adjustments to the system since those guys have been back there, but I doubt it, other than they're playing a much more simplified defense all the way around in terms of packages, at least. So it wouldn't surprise me if they simplified some other rotational scheme out of that as well. But I want to know why, if you look back at this, if Marcus Williams gets to be my age and he looks back on this event that happened more than 30 years ago in his life, and he says, you know what, I could have handled that better. I think that's where he may find himself. And he's staying on the Ravens for the rest of the year. There's just reasons why the Ravens won't let him go. But, it's an unfortunate thing. There's no way they will part ways this offseason. There's too much cap savings for them not to do that. But it's a really disappointing finish to his Ravens career. And I'm not sure I understand now, given how well things have worked out for Washington and Hamilton, why Marcus Williams couldn't be one of those two guys back there, and why we still couldn't have Hamilton playing dime. It doesn't completely make sense to me. So Brandon Stevens is still a full-time player now. He only moved over to dime in this game. When the Ravens were in that four-corner dime they play, they brought Tre'Davious White on the field. Tre'Davious White also replaced Wiggins for a series, but Stevens still playing basically every snap at this point, has not seen any significant loss in playing time. So I thought he had one of his best games of the year in terms of what happened this time. He had been doing a pretty good job of preventing balls over the top and allowing some back shoulder throws. This time, 20 yards on 5 targets, nothing wrong with that at all. Only gave up 6 yak, no problem at all. Everything to like about that sort of a performance, and I think that Brandon Stevens is coming through. He's been a serviceable sort of dime back in terms of what he's done. He does not line up always exactly in the spot where you think of a 3-3 alignment of a safety and corners to have him at dime, but he's a guy that often just lines up opposite a fourth split receiver, which is also fine. You can play it multiple ways. But the Ravens have been fairly effective with all of their packages in recent weeks. And him moving to dime, I think, has helped the defense in terms of having Tre'Davious White on the field, you know, quite possibly in the time since. And maybe also it's an addition by subtraction thing by getting an inside linebacker, the weak side linebacker, off the field with the coverage liability that either a Board or a Harrison can bring to the table. And I'm not saying that either of them is the bottom of the barrel kind of, you know, rookie Patrick Queen kind of level, but they're not great coverage players, and they're guys you would prefer to have your best coverage safety or cornerback replacing them. One second, please. For once, we have 15 or 20 seconds of dead air, and it's not me holding the mute button. Well, it is me holding the mute button, but it's not me holding the mute button and talking over it at that time. So that's a common trope on this show, to be sure. All right. I think that's about all I want to talk about right now in terms of incremental players. Let's just check the mailbag and see what we've got here. Appreciate folks listening today. It's I'm sure everybody's had a busy Christmas holiday season. I know we had a couple of questions here from earlier. So, okay, here's one from Alvindo. Actually wants this for Friday morning GM. Okay, we'll leave that for then. Okay, here's something. This came actually prior to the, that did not come prior to the previous show. So Ryan, head XO, says, do you think Mitchell gets a role on offense after the Hill concussion? Seems strange to me that he's been inactive the last few weeks, but not on the injury report. Well, I think we got our answer yesterday. And that is an interesting question, by the way, that Keaton Mitchell back and playing as much as he did yesterday was one of the interesting things. I mean, 11 carries, it's, you know, basically 25% of his previous career that we saw in this game. But good game for Keaton, certainly, in terms of what happened. I think we did talk about that on the offensive show, but appreciate the time. Anyway, if you wanted, we know you're long-term fans of the show. When you're listening this late in the second part of the podcast, really do appreciate the hashtag film study mailbag questions you ask. They mean a lot to us, and I'll do a better job of publicizing them on the day to make sure this happens. Obviously, some things going on health-wise that are not ideal here that we're still trying to work through. By the way, if you're looking for articles this week, there are no articles this week. I've done the analysis on the defense. The offensive line is still to come, and I'm going to be behind in terms of getting that done. Maureen and I completed the offensive line on the previous game, and I'll probably do a 2-for-1 special in the middle of next week looking at the offensive line play. So if you're wondering where are those and you're starting to get that nervous twitch in your hand or whatever, I'll tell you it's coming some point next week. Then I'll have both of them for you, but I've got to try and get over this thing first and get home. Appreciate you listening. I got one other thing to plug, and that is I'll be doing a show this off season or a series of shows on whether or not Harbaugh should be fired effectively. There's tremendous sentiment for it. I think there's probably no chance it happens prior to 2028, the end of the 2028 season. The logic basically is this. John Harbaugh is signed through 2025. What that means is this offseason, prior to entering the final year of his deal, they will negotiate a new extension of some sort with him, or they may mutually part ways immediately. I don't see the mutually part ways immediately happen after the kind of year he's had this year. It's been a very impressive year in a lot of ways, getting the pieces to fit together here and overcoming a very poor start defensively, overcoming a lot of defections in terms of the free agents who left this team, and just doing a very good job with both the young talent and the old. Also, I think the problem solving on defense to get the team turned around to the point where it is now, which is just, I think optimism for this defense is highly appropriate, will mean there's no way he gets fired this offseason. So if he doesn't get fired, he's almost certainly going to get a 3-year extension or a multi-year extension. Okay, now, if he gets a 3-year extension, that takes him, his last contract, his current contract, was 3 additional years. That expires after the 2025 season. So the next extension, presumably, would take him through the 2028 season. I think that is the likely time that the question will next reasonably be asked, is this the end of Harbaugh right now? Now, he could get fired a year early before the end of the contract, or they could agree to part ways if, at that point, Harbaugh's not offered a new deal after the 2027 season. He's not offered a new extension. The Ravens say, no, we'd love to have you to coach for this year, but not, we don't want you for 2028, or we're not committing to you yet for 2028. That could be true. But I think more likely it'll be 2028 will be his final year at the Ravens. It will be a go out at the end of a contract year potentially for him. I think if anything that happens before then, I think it'd be a matter of personal or family health crisis, you know, the things that come up in life that make you decide to quit early. And I don't think I see John coming from the family that he does with the background that he does, giving up easily on football at anything like the current age. And you look at the Harbaugh brothers. Jim looks like he needs to retire right now. A guy looks like he's 72 years old. John looks 58 years old or 55 years old. I mean, he doesn't look nearly as old. And in truth, he's, I think, 1 year older, right? So it's a hard thing to for me to believe that he'd be going. Anyway, back to the series. The series will be on whether or not Harbaugh will be fired. Here's what I'm looking for from people. And by the way, had one person who wanted to do it for a group, specifically German flock, wanted to have all the German fans each supply pros and cons for a list of Harbaugh to be fired or not. And by the way, if you want to do that, would love to have that sort of representation, because I think you get a more thorough pros and cons list when you look at it. And I'll tell you right now, the list provided by German flock, and this is just from one guy there, is the best list of pros and cons I've ever seen for Harbaugh being fired and not fired. The best, hands down. I really doubt anybody here among U.S.-based fans is going to be able to do better. But I want to give everybody the chance, and this will be a series of pods. I think that the format of it will be, we'll have, you know, several different parameters on which you might judge John to be fired or not. And then just dress that down in terms of, is this rational that you do this? I think there are two ways that people approach the discussion at all. And the first is, and these are generally people, the hardline people who really want Harbaugh fired. The first thing they say is, what does he actually do for this team? Okay, well, first of all, you really ought to know the answer to that question before you're suggesting he'd be fired. You're not really asking that question on anything but a rhetorical basis, at least not the way I read it. I could make you a list of 20 things he does for this team, and then you say, that's bullshit, that's bullshit, that's bullshit. That's exactly how you'd respond to that. That makes that question rhetorical. And I'm not going to engage with that kind of thing. What I want you to do is give me a legitimate pros and cons list and make it be thorough and thoughtful. Okay, so give me as many things as you can that John does well and as many things as you think are appropriate that he does poorly. Okay, and be as thoughtful as you can and try to make it specific that, yeah, he's cock blocking the next potential coordinator / head coach we had. You know, that might be a reasonable thing to point to. I know a lot of people have pointed to that, that, you know, we can't retain a good coordinator because we can't give the coordinator a head coaching position. You know, I think there's other advantages to the other side of that, which are it really helps to have a CEO head coach for certain things, including having two for the price of one eyes on each unit of the football, on the offense and the defense, but a number of other things too, where you have a court of appeals that's one level higher, where you have a guy who's always facing the field for game time decisions instead of going off the bench and trying to motivate his players while the action is going on. But anyway, this is a series I obviously, from spending this much time about it, I really care about. And I want you people to have a forum for what you think is important about getting rid of John Harbaugh. I want you to be good at defending your reasons why you want him gone or why you want him stayed. Because, hey, that's got to be defended too. There are lots of you know, record reasons why you say, well, don't change it. But there's also, you know, people who say it's time to cross-pollinate some ideas here. The Ravens organization has survived a lot of a change in ideas, and getting rid of the coach is one way you bring in fresh ideas. And we still keep the Greg Roman run game in a lot of ways, so why shouldn't we keep elements of the John Harbaugh era and the John Harbaugh, you know, way of managing the DNA of the organization? Why can't we keep that with a new head coach? So anyway, I want you to be part of this. Please do, and send me your, first of all, if you want to be involved, send me a DM on Twitter and I'll respond to you. And then I'll give you more information about what I'd like to see from you. But I would really love for as many people as possible to be involved in this. It'll be several pods. It'll be at least one panel discussion pod where we bring up a few topics and have people each chime in on why they think that that characteristic is important or not. And we'll probably do some others that are just pure pros and cons lists. And the more people you can have in your group to put together the list, I think that's a great way, as German Flock did. But please, love to hear from you. Thanks again for listening. Have a happy holiday season. Hope you're safe and healthy. And I'll talk to you again soon.
At Ritual, we know what goes into the holiday season. The potluck planning, the gift giving, the spreadsheets. So this new year, take a moment for yourself with science-backed support that puts you first. So whether you're focusing on supporting foundational health with a clean vegan multivitamin or supporting your gut health with Symbiotic Plus, do it with 30% off your first month at ritual.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.